should come our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Our first speaker for today is Bernadette, and she will be sharing for 15 minutes. This is a reminder that this is being recorded. Bernadette, how would you like your time?
Maybe 10 in the lot and then like 1 minute.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Right. Good morning. My name is Bernadette, and I definitely am a compulsive overeater. I want to thank Jackie and Deborah for asking me to share. I've never really concentrated on the traditions, and so this is perfect for me. I did read the chapter on the tradition one, and I like the last paragraph. It says, "We are not alone. We are connected to our fellow human beings. Our emotional and spiritual health depends upon the health of our relationships. The disease of compulsive eating, which once isolated us, led us to OA. Here in local groups, sponsorship roles, intergroups and service boards, region assemblies, and OA worldwide, we are learning to connect with other people in ways that nurture all of us as we recover together." And if you're new, congratulations, you're here. And if you're courageous, and if you're vulnerable, and if you raise your hand and if you participate, you will connect with a lot of people, and you'll have just a whole family of people to reach out to if you're ever alone and you slip. So I am always scared to share because I always cry, and that's because I hid all these emotions behind shields, first alcohol and drugs. And then I smoked to try and shield myself from people. And then I overspent. And then in 2014, the only really thing I had left was food, and I really went to town. So I'll just briefly tell you what it was like. I was born into the CIA, Catholic, Irish, and alcoholic family. It was very dysfunctional. There was chaos. I grew up, my parents were both, we were poor, so they had to work. So we were left alone. And my oldest sister took care of us. And there was a lot of violence in the family and chaos. And my mother's brothers and sisters, there were nine family members, and five of them died of alcoholism. So sadly, I have the poo-poo platter of addictions, and food is now the one that is hopefully going to be recovered from. And I am today recovered from it. And what I was, and what I still am, and what I'm trying to recover from is I was a people pleaser. I was always full of fear and anxiety, and I never thought I was worth anything. I was full of shame. And I lived that way my entire life. I functioned in life. When I moved to LA, I was 14. My dad got promoted and I had to leave. Went to a Catholic school because we were Catholic. I really didn't get any spirituality from the Catholic religion, and that's just my story. And so when I got my driver's license, I stopped going to church. But as I said, I lived in shame and I was sad, and we have a history of depression in our family. And when we moved to Los Angeles, I gained 30 pounds because I was 14. I was afraid, I was fearful. I had to start a new high school. I was in a new town, I had no friends. And so that's kind of what when I was looking back on my life, that's where I realized that I always looked to other things to protect me. So when I was young, I went to food, and then I went to the drugs and alcohol, and I got sober in 87, and then I stopped smoking in 2000. And then in 2014, I met this woman, Kim, and I watched her. And I watched her, I think it's 2014. I watched her and I thought, I could never eat like her. Like before she went to a restaurant, she would look at the menu and see what she could eat. And then maybe we'd choose a different restaurant. And I thought, I can never be like that. But slowly and surely, I started wandering around OA. And I went to the, she was lived in the San Fernando Valley. So I went to the meetings that she went to. And I went to the Saturday morning meeting and the Sunday morning meeting. But I never really, as they say on Unity, I didn't reach out. I didn't raise my hand. I just watched and I listened. But finally, in 2018, I started participating a little bit. I would raise my hand. I had the chair commitment on Sunday morning in the at Studio City. And then in 2019, Kim was speaking at that meeting, and I turned around to the woman behind me and I asked her to be my sponsor. And she, I think she reluctantly agreed, but she showed me for the first time what it was. Maybe I could have a God. She said, and in that meeting, there's a big sign up there and it says love. She said, why don't you make love your God? And I thought, well, how perfect is that? Because really, if there is more love in this world and integrity, I think we would have a more loving world. So love became my God. And eventually I started working the steps. She had me go through the steps. And now I have a routine where in the morning I wake up and I always make a gratitude list. I write out the food I'm going to eat. I send it to my sponsor. And I try to have commitments and I try to show up. I notice if we do this together, we can create a really loving environment. And I notice there's some people in this meeting who are always at the meeting early. They're always raising their hand. And I think the tradition one says if we could all participate more, and if we all do this together, you know, we could really make this a stronger organization. I know that the San Fernando Valley is really powerful. And you know, I live alone because of my history and my family life. I could never really connect. So I really, when I read that last paragraph, it's about how strong of a connection that we have with other people. And that's what we need to, or I need to strive for, is to be more authentic, to be more compassionate, and to be more vulnerable, raise my hand more often, speak more often, because I'm relatively new. And as I do that, all the shields that I have up will fall away and I'll be able to connect, because all those things that I relied on to protect me, the alcohol, the drugs, the food, all of those isolated me from people. I couldn't create loving relationships because I was alone. I spent most of my life, I tried to have relationships. It did not work out. And today I live alone, except for I have this cat, Coco. Coco suffers from a food addiction. So there's two of us in this house. Our other cat, I have to pet her before she'll eat. She eats very daintily. Coco and I gobble it down. But so I'm very appreciative of the San Fernando Valley, these meetings. They have really saved my life. And I'm beginning to become a regular. I'm beginning to raise my hand. I'm beginning to participate as a unity, as we're, it is suggested in the traditions. If we all work at this together, we're no, the, you will never have to be alone. And if you're new, I encourage you to do what I couldn't do for about 3 years, raise your hand and become a part of this organization. It really will save your life. So I sponsor today. Now that's a scary thing because I didn't think I had anything to give. And you know what you have to do then is maybe talk to other people and find out what they did when they were sponsoring, if when things come up. And so together, by talking to other people, you know, someone called me the other day and I answered the phone and he said, you know, I've called a number of people and you're one of the few that answered the phone. So I it's very scary for me to reach out by phone. I frequently will text, but to actually call someone is very, very scary. But I think the more that we reach out, the more that we become vulnerable, the stronger we'll be in this organization. And today's speaker in the Sunday morning meeting, I stayed around and we talked afterwards. And he says, first of all, when you get to the program, you have to work at it. So you have to become vulnerable and talk to your sponsor, and you have to work the steps. And he says, and then if you work them long enough, then you start practicing the steps. And then if you stick around here long enough, you raise your hand enough, and you contribute enough, pretty soon then you'll start living the steps. So I really want to thank Jackie for asking me to speak. It's just so hard for me, but I think if we speak the language of the heart, we can save each other. When I was early on in my sobriety, I had 1 year. I went on a trip with some friends, and I thought, well, this is going to be scary. I'm going to have to travel to Sweden, and then I don't know what I'm going to eat. And I went there. I went with two friends who were normies. You know, they eat a little. They stick to a diet. They don't belong to any organization. They just live life normally. I can't believe that those people actually exist. But I was there, and one for some reason, out of the blue, we were there for 10 days, and they said, do you want to go with us? We're going to take a walk over here. And I said no, and I went to a grocery store and I bought about 2 pounds of chocolate, and I went to my room and I ate it all. So it came out of nowhere. All of a sudden, I just was compulsively overeating. So you have to stick to the group. And I came back, and it took me about 3 months to get abstinent again, but it was surprising. And then I isolated. So it's much like the alcohol that I have. If I take that drug, those foods that my sponsor, we talked about the red, yellow, and green foods, if I take the yellow and it becomes a red, I cannot eat that food. Those are not my foods. So I hope that you stick with your green foods, and I hope to see you at a meeting, and I'm really appreciative that I was asked to share. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bernadette. Okay, now we are going to go to our second speaker, Alex, and I'm gonna unmute and let you know. How would you like your time, Alex?
Oh, if you can just give me a 2-minute warning, that'd be great.
Okay,
Thanks.
I'll unmute and say 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you so much. My name is Alex S. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I wanna thank Jackie for asking me to speak, and to everyone who's of service here. I've only been with OA for it'll be 2 years in May, and I guess the best place for me to start is with the Tradition One, and it's actually the first sentence of Tradition One, which is, we compulsive overeaters have lived much of our lives in isolation. I have definitely lived my life. Much of my life in isolation, given that I only started, less than 2 years ago, it stands to reason that I lived most of my life in isolation. I come from a background. My father was an alcoholic. He also tried taking his life twice before I turned 10. And I experienced a lot of ex abuse before the age of 10. Every form of abuse, and that led to all sorts of compulsive behaviors, whether it be, overeating, later on drugs, alcohol, and my life really took a tough turn, and it wasn't until I got into my 50s. One day I just became sick and tired of being sick and tired. I had gained a significant amount of weight throughout those 50 years. All close to 400 pounds, or maybe even more than 400 pounds. I don't exactly know. And one day I woke up and decided that I was going to take my life. And in doing so, the only thing that saved me, I shouldn't say the only thing that saved me, but what really helped to save me is that I started going through what that was going to look like mindfully. I started mindfully going through, how I was going to do it, and what I was going to use to take my life, and the consequences of my actions in terms of physically what that was going to look like. And then suddenly something happened to me, and I started realizing the impact that my actions would have on those closest to me, my children, my wife, my relatives, my coworkers, and anyone in my orbit, friends, and how I was going to become a statistic. And it's in that moment that I reached a point of desperation that compelled me to A, acknowledge that I had a problem to begin with, and then to take action. And that happened, less than 2 years ago, and it was less than 2 years ago that I found OA. It was only a few days after that, going through that experience, that I ended up attending a number of different OA meetings around the world, in any French or in any English-speaking meeting that I could find, and I landed, miracle of miracles, on the San Fernando OA group, and I had no idea where the valley was, and now I make a lot of calls to the San Fernando Valley, and I found a sponsor. That sponsor introduced me to sober eating, and rather quickly I started practice, or I should say, I started working the steps, and I started coming off that desire to eat compulsively. But where the worm really started to turn for me is when I started caring more about others than I did for myself. And that's where I felt as though the program kind of lifted me out of this isolation that I'd felt for so long. And it wasn't until I went through step eight, and especially step nine, that I felt this incredible sense of relief from making amends with all those I had harmed in my past. And there was a significant amount of wreckage. But I really want to bring this back to the unity piece, is that there is no way that I would have been able to do this without my fellows. And just by the very definition of the word, fellowship, this is not a group of one. I lived in the disease of self, that I lived as one for so long. And the more involved I become in OA, and the more people I talk to, and this is coming from a person who was extremely judgmental, Now, when I talk to people, I realize that it doesn't matter who they are, their gender, the race, the religion, or wherever they are, in their recovery, I see part of them in me. And that's the unity piece. That's what really makes me feel connected with each and every one of you. And that's what's really so powerful about, the fellowship, especially when you're able to, to meet people in person, just to be able to hug them and connect with them and let them know that this hope, you're going to be okay. And I used to, I'm a crier too, as you can tell. But I have to tell you, these are not tears of pain, tears of joy, because this program has given me my life. And I'm living life now for the first time. It's incredible. And it's scary. But you know what? I'm doing it with all of you. And it's so powerful. So I know that I have some more time left here, but I'll just leave it at that. Thank you so much for asking me to share, especially Jack.
Thank you both so much. Thank you, Alex. So at 11:30, what we normally do is we have a volunteer go ahead and read the OA promise. It will be posted on the screen. Would someone like to read that? Okay, Ginny, hold on 1 second.
Thank you so much. Should I read now, Jackie?
Oh, it's an honor. Thank you all. Ginny's compulsive overeater. The OA promise. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams.
Thank you so much for reading that. What we're going to do is have the seventh tradition right now, and we have time for question and answers and sharing. So, Janet, what should go first?
I would go with questions first, and then if there's time permitting, sharing.
Wonderful. So
And I
in the
put the
chat.
link in the chat for the San Fernando Valley Intergroup for Seventh Tradition.
Thank you so much. The floor is open if you have a question for one of our speakers. No pressure. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, thank you both very much for your service. This could be a question for one of you or both of you. Was there a specific moment, either in your abstinence or in your recovery, where the unity became like what you were craving the most, or like maybe like when it like really like was clear that like that was helping you more than whatever it was you were doing before. I hope that question makes sense.
You're muted, Bernadette.
I'll try to answer that. I was trying to give my contribution, but I wasn't successful. I think when I saw, for me, when I saw the unity of the San Fernando Valley, people and there's a like a core group who are always there, and I always looked up to them. And for a number of years, it never occurred to me to maybe I could try to be part of that core group. So it's come in the last 2 years. I was a delegate. I've been a delegate. I try to get commitments, and I try to show up early. That's my new thing now, is to try to show up early so that I can read before the meetings. Because if you stick around and you show up early, you can actually talk to these mentors that I call mentors, the core group of the San Fernando Valley, the ones who always share. So I was always impressed by that group. And I think by their example, like the example of Kim, I watched her and I thought, wow, one of these days, maybe I'll be like Kim, inspired me to up my game, so to speak, to have the courage to raise my hand, because it is scary. So when newcomers, when they ask newcomers to raise their hand and say they're a newcomer, and a lot of people don't, because it's so scary to put yourself out there, especially if you've lived most of your life alone and most of your life sad, depressed, not feeling worthy. By raising your hand, you start to feel like you have some worth as a human being, and that life can be fun and joyous. And if you stay in the gratitude and the sunshine of the spirit, and you communicate with people from the language of the heart, and not the surface chatter, but actually, I remember when I was new in another program and I needed a car. And there was a guy that was selling Mercedes-Benz, the old classic ones. And I always wanted one of those old little sports cars. When I called him up, he goes, "Wait a second, Bernadette, how are you?" And that's what I'm talking about, that language of the heart that we share here, where we actually care about one another and we actually try to help one another. So that would be my answer to your question, Chris. Thanks.
Hey Chris, I'll try and answer the question here. In terms of, I think it was, when did unity actually, mean something? I can only say that any that there was a I went through a period where there was a rapid change in me physically, and there's been a couple of times that I've thought that I can do this on my own, and that's just my ego coming back, trying to bite me in the ass, and it wasn't until I got to a point where I relapsed, and was honest about the relapse, that I realized in that moment that I just couldn't do this. I couldn't do it alone. And that moment of honesty has permeated other parts of my life, and it tells me that when I'm thinking, I'm bullshitting myself, and that's when it's time to double down. And when I don't feel like reaching out to people, that's the time to reach out. And when I don't feel like talking, that's the time to raise my hand. And just kind of taking on this opposite action, it all that just tells me I just couldn't do it alone. And that makes me crave being more and more part of this group. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you both. Janet, do you have a question?
I do. Alex, my question is, once you got to OA and got abstinent, did the suicide ideation go away?
Yeah, it went away almost as yeah, it went away fairly quickly. And I think that the reason it did is because I was at a point of utter desperation. I now look back, it's very difficult for my wife to hear me talk about this, but I have to say that it's one of the it was almost like a gift for me because it was like a it was a solid bottom. Like I couldn't go any I couldn't go down any further. But yeah, I mean, over the course of time, I just realized I'm less and less crazy because I, now after a year and a half, I could look back and I realize like how much of a mess I truly was. But yeah, it was within a few months and it's been gradual ever since. But I've come nowhere close to feeling those ideations again.
Thank you. That's a strong message of hope.
Kathy, do you have a question?
Yeah, and then this would be for both or either, but you both talked about your upbringing, which I've never heard the CIA before, but I love that. I'm gonna use that because I definitely can relate to that, and and the abuse and everything. So I'm in another program, Al-Anon, which I share easily. I don't isolate as much, but there's something about OA where I don't share as much, and I don't know. And of course, I'm trying to analyze it, which there's no, that's not going to help me. But just I don't know whether I don't think feel like I'm as qualified because I don't see how my eating relates to the chaos I grew up with. But anyway, I don't know if you're both in if you're in multiple programs, and I guess I'm struggling a little bit with that. So if you are, if you could share at all, kind of how you balance the multiple things going on in addition to food, that makes sense.
You're muted.
I got sober in the beverage program in 1987, I didn't work really. I don't know if it was the group I was in or if I just, they say is you, if you stick around, more will be revealed. But I didn't work the steps like I've worked them in OA. And there it was sort of like a survival when you're in, for me, in AA. It was mostly I spent my time going to the group meetings, but I hardly ever shared. And it wasn't until I got to OA where I really worked the steps better than I ever did. I worked the steps with my sponsor in AA, but I find for me that I'm uncovering more, and I'm learning more about myself in OA than I did in than I did in AA. But I think all of them, AA saved my life. I mean, I'd be dead now. When I got sober, I went to a therapist. And because I was drinking alone and living alone, and I was functioning sort of, but she said to me, you have a moment of clarity. You're either going to die or you can get sober. So I suggest you, and I did. I followed that, and I did get sober. But I feel for me, I have uncovered more in OA, and because I think OA gives me a plan of eating, it gives me a plan of action. And so I need that. I need those crutches. If there were I mean, I just need as many crutches as I can get. So I love the fact that now I eat the same thing almost every day, and I don't care because I know that it, I just, it's easier for me. I live alone. I don't want to cook a lot of different things. So I eat the same thing. And I do not care. Right now, I'm going to have a colonoscopy. So now they ruined my diet because I can't have raw vegetables. I eat mostly salads. So unfortunately, on Tuesday, I'm going to have a colonoscopy. But I love the program and I love all the people in the program, you know, the ones that are here, Miriam. I love it when Miriam shares because I know I'm going to get it. Oh, it's going to be the truth. It could be ugly at times, but she is going to tell me the truth. And I think that's what is so wonderful about listening to people share their stories. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.
Kathy, great, great question. I think it's just my nature. I'm a root cause type of person, so I need to understand, why things are. And I know that in the program that they don't really matter, but in my mind, like, how did this all come to pass? And as I look back, I had all sorts of different compulsive behaviors. Compulsive lying, like the first rule in my family was you don't talk about what happens in my family. And I watched a lot of compulsive behaviors being practiced by other family members. And it went from lying to eating, and then drug, alcohol. And and it's funny because I was just talking to a fellow who's on here today. As I dealt with the sobriety from my alcoholic foods, I started going to all sorts of other different compulsive behaviors. Like I went through a buying spree, for someone that had been, that was I'd never, I don't remember the last time I was able to buy something off the rack to wear, and so I went on this buying spree, and I'm now very mindful because I can turn to almost anything to push down those feelings that I don't want to feel, which is part of what led to me getting to where I am. So I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah.
Thank you, both of you. Thanks.
Awesome. We have a question in the chat. I'm going to read it out loud. It says, from Laura Joy M, could you share how you went from isolation to a way of life where you pick up the 3,000-pound phone with ease? Any practical tips for people with social anxiety?
I think, well, I have social anxiety. I've had social anxiety my entire life. I gotta tell you, it's not until this year that I was really, I mean, I still get afraid when I pick up the phone, you know. And so but I do pick up the phone when people call me, because I have a lot. Every time I'm in a meeting, I try to write down all the phone numbers. So I have, and then I have in my phone book about 100, and next to their name it says OA, so I can recognize when it's someone from OA, so I can pick it up, because it's a gift when someone calls you from OA. And I'm trying to reach out more, because I want to tell most of the people in the San Fernando Valley how much I love them. They've saved my life, so I like to let them know that, because this particular San Gabriel Valley, it's such a strong group, and I really do care for everyone that I see in these meetings, because they all share their truth, and I think if we're courageous enough to be vulnerable, we will connect on a level that we don't connect with other people, and that's why I like connecting in these groups, because you get to know the real person, not the facade that I hid behind for most of my life. So I'm lucky that I stumbled into this OA and that I worked the steps, because I'm old, man. I mean, I don't have that many years left. And so I need to find that joy and that gratitude that I didn't have for most of my life. So calling is so important, you know, for me, and I'm still working on it, actually. So thank you.
Great, great question, Laura Joy. Because it's something I still have problems doing today. It's not something that comes it's not something that comes easy to me. But you know, I think where things have changed for me is that I realize that I'm not, I think the mind shift for me is that I'm not picking up the phone for me. I'm picking up the phone for someone else. I'm picking up, I'm taking action to connect with someone else. Because here's the thing. I've received calls from people that are on that are on this meeting today who called me, and it helped me, it touched me in such a way, it did something, and I can't quite explain that. I can't quite wrap my head around it. But if that's happening for me, then it stands to reason that when I reach out to them or someone else, it helps them. And I think that takes me out of the mindset of me, that because I'm a person that has been, you know, I've been judgmental of others, but I've been extremely judgmental of myself. And so, you know, if someone doesn't call me, I'll go through all sorts of reasons why they're not. Or, you know, if I call someone and they don't pick up, I'll think, well, it's because I'm Canadian, I'm a this, I'm a that. Like I will judge myself. And then I really have to start thinking to myself, are those beliefs true? You know? And so it really, really helps to be able to, it makes the phone a lot lighter. You know, to know that you're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for someone else. So I hope that helps. Thanks.
Thank you both for answering all the questions. We can have open sharing until 11:57. If anyone would like to share on Unity or anything, or even better, if someone doesn't want to share, go ahead. I'll time you.
Hi, Lita, compulsive eater. Oh my gosh. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Bernadette, Alex, and everybody who is on this meeting and taking part of this. I didn't know anything about steps and traditions when I walked in the door a little over 5 years ago. I had no idea what the hell I was walking into. I just knew that I wanted to lose weight and that the only thing that ever got promoted was the first step. And I knew that I was powerless over food and that my life was fucking unmanageable. And at times it's still unmanageable and unbearable. A couple of weeks ago, I tripped over air. I now have hairline fractures. And it's like, okay, fine. Higher power wants me to slow down. I can say honestly, am definitely of the educational variety. I actually came into this program when there were actually still rooms for a couple of months before everything went to Zoom. And everybody was taking down phone numbers and taking pictures of phone numbers. And I didn't really know what that was for and didn't really ask anybody what that was for. It wasn't until I talked to my sponsor at that time, who is on this screen right now, and told her of this dreadful, dreadful time when I just really wanted a donut more than anything in the land. And I thought the universe wanted me to have one because there was a parking space in front of the shop. And that's kind of how I sort of viewed like a higher power, is if you got a parking space where you were going. And I told her how I had like this devil on one shoulder just going, go ahead and do it. And this angel just going, you don't want to do it. You're feeling so much better. Don't do this. And I sat in my car for 3 hours and I cried. And I called my sponsor afterwards and I was like, I just sat there and cried. And she just like asked me so very simply, well, did you call someone? And I said, no. And she said, what do you think those phone numbers are for? And I thought, oh, okay. She's like, I've been telling you to like call two people a day. And I thought, well, yeah, fine, call two people a day and see how they're doing, but not in front of the donut shop when you're crying, kind of a thing. Like, it took me forever to put the pieces together. But I absolutely love the idea of unity. And when I first came into this thing and heard about a higher power and everything, I was raised with just a traditional sense of religion. I had no idea what was going on and what this higher power is going to be. So initially, sort of unity was my higher power. It was the group conscious of the people in the rooms that were there and were smiling and had something and knew something I didn't know. And when going through the big book the first time, it was pointed out to me that in the forward, the forward to the first edition, it starts out with that gigantic we and being told, and I don't know if it's true that in the days that the big book was printed, that it cost extra to make fonts bigger and to put things in italics, and you really needed to pay attention to that. And I did pay attention to that, and I knew that for 63 years of my life, I tried to do this alone, and I sucked at it. And my head is a bad neighborhood. So I am grateful for the traditions. I still couldn't tell you what they all are in order unless I read them, but I am so happy to be here and so grateful to everyone for sharing. Thank you.
Would anyone like to share? Janet?
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Oh, it's still morning. Yay. Hi, everybody. If you were on the Sunday morning meeting, you might have heard Brian announce that, speaking of unity, that the San Fernando Valley has been approached by the Los Angeles Intergroup to explore the possibility of merging the two intergroups together as one for a position of strength. And we have a committee of six members of three of each board. The board chairs are, of course, always part there. They are part of any ad hoc committee. And then I'm attending as the office manager, where technical questions are like, how long's the lease on our office, and what would this look like, and what would that look like? So we're just starting to kind of get the message out, and we're moving forward as if we're going to do it, and see if we meet any stumbling blocks along the way. And then we'll be sharing it at delegates meetings as we go. But it's kind of exciting, the idea of, all being on one team, and then all the meetings will be on one website, and it will be easier on newcomers to find us and to find our meetings. And it's just, it's a strike in the direction of unity. And this program, I mean, this program saved my life. And I'm so grateful. I've been a West Sider, I've been a Valley Sider, I've been, I even did a stint in Orange County for bad behavior. I really am so grateful to all of you. I mean, this is a core constituent of people who show up, be of service, send in their seventh tradition, and it's really important no matter where you are in the world, It's important to support our intergroups because there's strength and safety in numbers, and we want the program to be around for a very long time. We're 65 years old now, and I'd like to see that continue. So thanks for letting me share my two cents about unity.
Can I ask a question, Janet? Just a procedural one. At some meetings, I've heard people say that if members want to submit comments about the proposed merger, they should. Although I was got if there's a task force at work, is it premature to do that? And people should wait until the proposal is floated?
I think that what we ought to do is have a place where questions and comments can be left on the website and we each have the same webmaster. So our board meeting is coming up, I think the 4th and the 5th, or the 5th and the 6th of March. And I will put that down as a, oh, it's the 3rd and the 4th. So I will put that down as an agenda item for the board meeting, because we do want input and we do want to answer questions as we go. We don't want this to be some kind of big surprise that we drop on, you know. And you can also use your delegate as a resource for fielding questions live.
Because at the moment, I believe the delegates only know that there's this proposal and the task force so underway. So I don't know the talk asking delegates. I know I am for one meeting. Delegates aren't going to know much, at least for now. Would that be accurate?
Can you repeat that? Because I could barely hear you.
I'm sorry. That at present, all delegates know is that it's been proposed and there's a task force looking at it. So I'm not sure what questions delegates could answer. So maybe
No,
they should.
ask them to field the questions at the delegate meeting. Bring your
Oh, to bring
questions.
them up. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely.
Thanks for clarifying.
You just wanted complete transparency about it.
Great. I'm going to pick on myself. Hi, I'm Jackie, compulsive overeater. Bernadette and Alex, thank you so much for sharing today on Tradition One. I don't know where it's from, but I remember reading that it is our weakness, not our strength, that binds us together. And I tried for a really long time to work Overeaters Anonymous, like Jackie Eaters Anonymous, and also to not even focus on the food. And when I came back after a horrific relapse, I felt like so carried from all of you that once I completely admitted I can't do this at all, I too have the part of the disease where it manifests in suicidal ideation, and that also was relieved. So it's amazing to hear other people, because I thought that I was like, why would I want to kill myself because of a bag of chips? Well, it's because I'm a real compulsive overeater that is a 100-pounder, and I feel so grateful that we're all here together. And I don't have anything else to say except for in comment to what was talked about with the merger. It would be very scary if when I was coming out of relapse, Overeaters Anonymous was not here for me. And I can't even imagine OA not being a place. And so I would just keep talking about that we are OA. We make up this program by saying yes and picking up the phone in between meetings and doing these types of workshops and being able to be of service. And I think that everyone knows that OA exists, but when I found out that OA existed, I was like, what? There's a program for, I didn't know. I had no idea. And there still are people out there in the world that have no idea that OA exists. So, and are suffering and wanting to kill themselves because they can't stop eating. So I forgot to time myself and I will shut up now. Thank you for listening. It is 11:58 and I just want to say thank you all for participating. I'm going to actually post the OA promise. And if we can all unmute, is that okay? Can that be the closing prayer? I feel like that's appropriate. Let me just get it up. Hold on, let me get the prayer up. I think I lost it. Let's see. Hold on. Okay. Okay, we are going to close out the meeting with the OA promise.
I put
put
my
my
hand
hand
in
in
yours,
yours.
and
Together,
together
we
we can
can
do
do
what
what
we
we
could never do
never
alone.
do alone.
No longer is there a
No longer
sense
is there a
of
sense of
no longer
hopelessness.
must
No
we
longer
no
must
longer
longer
must
can
we
we
each
unsteady
depend
willpower.
upon our own unsteady
We all
willpower.
together
We
now,
are all
reaching
together
out
now,
our hands
reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. We join hands
join hands
for
we
love and
love
understanding on our wildest
beyond our
dreams.
wildest dreams.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Bernadette and Alex and
Thank
everyone.
you.
Thank you
Thank you
all.
Happy unity.